Okay. I have a question for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
In the song "I Miss You" by Blink 182, do you know this one?
No.
The one that starts like "Hello there, the angel from my nightmare." You know this one, right?
No.
I know the "Hello there" part.
Hello there. So shortly after that, the singer Mark Hoppus says, "We can live like Jack and Sally if we want," which is a reference to Nightmare Before Christmas, correct?
Okay.
Right?
Okay. So yes, there's probably a lot of Jack and Sally's over history. I'm just saying.
No, well, then he says, "Where you can always find me, and we'll have Halloween on Christmas," which I think we know for
okay,
sure.
Then now. Okay, that's okay. Pretty explicit.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So.
Okay, Mark.
I watched this movie like 3 times in the last week because this is now my son's favorite film.
See, we can't make it to Oogie Boogie. We get to Oogie Boogie, and my kid's like, "Actually, check, please. I can't interact with this."
Mosey, he covers our eyes. He's like, "This is too much for you."
Yeah.
But the problem that I realized, Jack and Sally, basically no spark at all until the very final second. Literally, Jack is like, he's done his whole thing, and then Sally like drifts off, and he's like, "Hey, do you think she's into me?" And that's the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Where is Mark Hoppus
sexual chemistry there?
Yeah, like this is not an aspirational couple goal.
No. Do you think it's because when he sings, he's an entirely different human?
Oh, interesting.
Okay.
Now, for people that aren't aware, Danny Elfman does the singing in Nightmare Before Christmas, but some random other actor does the
incorrect
voice talking.
Incorrect. Not on some random other actor. You're talking about West Virginia's own Chris Sarandon. All right, that's how you know Jack Skellington can fucking party, because he's a West Virginia boy. When he's got a whole, you know, the huge stack of pepperoni rolls that you always see in his kitchen. Mm-hmm. He's West Virginia through and through, baby. Believe
Is it true
gold.
That they hired him originally to do the acting and the singing, but every time he tried to sing, he could only sing "Country Road"?
That is absolutely true. You are really a movie buff, Chris.
It makes karaoke very difficult for me and Justin.
You know that Danny Elfman was mad about that because he wanted to do the talking parts.
Yeah, he would have fucking crushed it.
Which is like, well, no, it's fucking typical New York types wanting to take jobs from West Virginians.
What do you mean by New York types, Justin?
Fucking New York types always rolling up into West Virginia, coming into our minds.
Yes. Our minds, our coal.
Our coal.
Yeah, I'm not going to work those mines, thanks.
Fracking our seams. I don't know what you
some people are wanting to stop the fracking. Are you hearing about this?
Which wild to me. Give me that gas.
This show got so political.
I mean, that's something that we could all find common ground on, right?
Yeah.
So this show is started. The show has already started. This is no longer
I like to call
show.
Fracking cool fuel.
Okay. You know what? I call it Mountain Dew because it's right. Mountain Dew cool fuel. Love that stuff. It's right there. Can't build a skate park on top of a mountain unless you cut the top off of it first. That's all I'm saying. Cool fuel.
I'm going to power my car and heat my house with earth farts.
My heart goes out to Jelani, who now has to choose between a hypersexual Nightmare Before Christmas bit and a
full-throated endorsement of fracking.
Why not both?
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the scariest games of the creek.
What?
The creek. I was trying to do
like a creaking floorboard.
The scariest shames of the creek. You know, like that, or
I don't know why it would be shame. This is Griffin McElroy, and I know the scariest game of the week.
My name is Christopher Thomas Plant, and I know the most ghoulish game of the week.
My name is Russ Rushick, and I know the best game of the ween.
Did you call yourself
Did you bungle
Russ?
Your own name?
Yeah, I fumbled my name, but then I said ween instead of week.
Oh, of the ween.
Yeah.
Cool.
Good. It's happening.
Powerful.
This is an episode.
That's what they call it on TikTok.
The ween?
Yeah.
The ween. God, thanks for joining us for the besties. This is a roundtable discussion of the latest and greatest in home interactive entertainment. It's the only podcast with the guts to never do the intro the same way twice. And we are continuing that powerful trend now by easing you into not a discussion of the single hottest game of the week, but a little bit of a survey of the state of scary games as they're out there. We are going to be focusing on Phasmophobia. Chris Plant, can you tell me a little bit about it?
No, I can't. How about you tell me a little bit about it?
All right, look behind you. Do you see the ghost?
Oh my gosh.
You just played Phasmophobia, my friend. We're going to talk a lot more about it right after this break.
Chris Plant, were you, and be honest, too scared to play Phasmophobia?
Absolutely. I don't play, outside of PT, which I was a real big boy for, I don't play scary games because I'm a scaredy cat.
Chris Plant, this is the third week in a row that you have not played our assigned besties game. Are you about to Yoko on us? Because you have to tell us if you're going to Yoko.
No. Here's the thing you might not know. Two video game consoles are about to get launched.
What?
And I have to oversee a website.
That doesn't seem likely, Chris Plant, because it seems like I would have heard about new games coming out for them if two new consoles are coming out.
That's true.
I think I've probably played the most Phasmophobia out of anyone.
Go for it.
Ever.
In the world,
I'm the real pro gamer of Phasmophobia. Phasmophobia is a first person horror game that is available on Windows PCs. You can also play it in VR, which, in I guess full fairness to Chris, I have been too chicken shit to attempt, because just the regular old playing it on my old widescreen computer monitor is enough to actually genuinely make me quite scared. It is a ghost hunting game, although I feel like that terminology makes you imagine a thing like a Ghostbuster.
Yeah, Dan Aykroyd.
Dan Aykroyd.
It's more like the cable shows, the like Learning Channel.
It is
like ghost
much
hunters.
More like what is it? Ghost Adventures, I think, is the one with
any permutation of ghost and verb. It's going to
get you there, but
it's going to get you there.
I think Ghost Adventures was like the first big one that I remember watching, where three fratty idiots go into, say, an asylum, and it's like, fight me, ghosts! And that's basically what they do. No ghosts are slain or trapped in crystals or banished with salts or whatever. They just kind of go and rile up some ghosts. In this game,
we should mention, though, in those examples, there are no actual ghosts. It's just idiots in a room.
Well, do you mean, are you feeling like we needed to mention the fact that ghosts aren't real here on
our
podcast?
No,
is that what you wanted to get across?
I would say that you never actually see any ghosts on those shows.
Right. Yeah. The main reason for that, Russ, is going to be that that ghosts aren't real is what's going to get
wait,
you
wait,
on
quick,
that
quick,
one.
Quick show of hands. Raise your hand if you think a ghost is real.
Ghost or ghosts in general?
Ghosts in general.
I could be convinced, but I'm not currently occupying that space.
Yeah, I think the science is still out.
In this game, the ghosts are very much real because they will get angry and kill you.
They'll choke Griffin to death.
Yes, they kind of wrap their nasty, nasty hands around your face, and then you are dead. So it's a cooperative game. There's a team of four. You go into these haunted locations. You use a variety of ghost hunting tools to discover where in the house this spectral energy is concentrated. And then you gather evidence, three pieces of evidence, to determine what type of spirit or wraith or poltergeist or demon you are dealing with. That
Should
is the main objective.
Should we talk through like the experience of like Justin? So Justin, Griffin, and I had a multiplayer match.
Yes.
Where'd we go? Into like just a random like suburban home?
There's a lot of different sort of houses of various like layouts and sizes. There is a school. There are a different number of maps of like increasing size and difficulty. There's a leveling system, so as you progress through the game, you unlock new tools and you also unlock more difficult maps and difficulty settings.
In the situation that we were in, we walked into the suburban house, and you know, I was running around with a thermometer. I think Justin had like a camera that he placed down on the kitchen table. Griffin was doing like EM reporting shit throughout the house. And eventually we found that the kitchen seemed to be pretty damn haunted.
Yeah.
All the things were spiking. And we got really scared.
Yeah. So there's a sort of setup phase for 5 minutes. So whenever you arrive at a location, you have 5 minutes before the ghost will become aggressive. And you use that phase to locate the haunted area and start setting up in that area, which is a really cool, like, idea, because it incentivizes, like, trying to be strategic and spreading out as soon as you roll up into the house, and then, like, going into a fairly tense, like, detective mode. There are, I think, like, 5 or 6 different kinds of evidence that you can get, so you can... using the thermometer or just looking at your breath, you can find freezing temperatures. Mm-hmm. So you find that and you mark it in your journal, right? If you have an EMF reader that will almost always detect the ghost, but if it hits like super high levels, then that counts as a piece of evidence. There is a book that you can lay down, and if a ghost writes in it, that is obviously evidence that the ghost is there. So there's using the three pieces of evidence, you figure out what type of ghost it is. The different ghosts have different ways of pacifying them, different ways of pissing them off. Almost every ghost gets very angry if you say their name, because the game uses voice recognition over voice chat, which is a really cool thing. There's a spirit box, which is like a radio that you ask questions of the ghost. And there's like a preset list of questions that will work. Things like, how old are you? And sometimes they will respond through the spirit box, which is pretty creepy every time. You're like, how old are you? And you hear like, adult. You're like, okay, that's evidence, it's evidence, it's evidence.
That is a weird thing to say to that question, though.
I have a question.
Right, that's what three kids in a trench coat standing on each other's shoulders say when they're trying to buy booze.
What do they write in the book? Like, do they blog? Like,
yeah, they write sort of about their emojis. No, it's like,
yeah,
don't forget
to drink your Ovaltine.
Yeah, it's like creepy creepy patterns for the most part. So anyway, 5 minutes ends, and after that, sort of the grace period is over, and then the... like ghost activity will begin to get pretty wild, and then the ghost will occasionally enter a hunting phase. And during that hunting phase, typically the front door of the house shuts and locks, and you have to find a place to hide and stay safe until the ghost activity ends. But while the ghost is hunting, they will like manifest. You can take pictures of them. There are like side objectives, like take a picture of the ghost, stop a ghost from hunting you by like using a crucifix, things that are pretty high risk, high reward. And the more of those objectives you fulfill, the more money you get. There's this really cool idea in the game where you use your money between missions to purchase these hunting tools that whenever you like join into a lobby, you add from your personal inventory to the like the hunting van's like inventory. And if you die, you lose all that stuff. There's insurance on the lower difficulty settings where you can get sort of a refund for some of the things you lose when you die. But like, it really adds a lot of tension because it's kind of hard to get enough money to like have a good stockpile of hunting gear. And if you die and your party wipes, like you just lose all that shit.
Yeah. So the time that we played with Justin and the time I played with Justin and Griffin, we found a shitload of evidence. Things were doing great. And then we wanted to just see the ghost because, like, where's the fun in just, like, taking pictures and checking the temperature of nothing? So, as Griffin mentioned, you can say the name of the ghost and they'll get angry with you and attack. We tried a lot.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We were also playing in the very first level on the lowest difficulty setting. So that is the level that, like, is the training level that has, like, hunting turned off. Which I don't think it was in the specific mode we were playing, but it is not surprising that it went down like that. Although it is hysterical to see three grown adults walking around a house with flashlights and cameras just yelling, Richard Martinez! Richard Martinez! Tricky Dick Martinez!
We did start switching to Bobby. Maybe he prefers it was Robert Miller. He prefers Bobby. Bobby Miller.
Bobby Miller, the idiot ghost who got killed like a dum-dum. Yeah.
If I can offer the opinion of someone who did not play this game a lot and did not was not fully indoctrinated into it is, in my humble opinion, if you are looking for something a bit more casual or something that's easy to jump into, this is not that. It is still, I think, a decent way away from being ready for primetime. I know a lot of people are getting into it and sort of overcoming that, but it's like, it's early. Like if
it's jank as fuck. We could be pretty direct. It's jank as fuck.
Yeah, there's a lot of really bizarre, even the basics of like picking things up and setting them down and stuff is like, is just very weird and unintuitive. It feels more like three bumbling idiot ghost hunters who are like dropped their camera and it fell in the crib. Oh no, I dropped a damn crucifix in the toilet. I gotta come get it because I pressed the wrong button.
It's also funny because if you try to look down and pick something up, if someone is looking at you at that point, you are bending at the waist at a 90 degree angle. Ooh.
It's hysterical.
The animations are not great.
Two things. It is, there are, for its earliness, there are so many cool ideas here that I understand. This game is if you don't sort of pay attention to this stuff, is like hot as hell right now. Like it is up there with Among Us in terms of like the thing that everybody's talking about right now. I think part of that is because like if you go on YouTube and type in like PHA, you're going to get flooded with like YouTubers screeching while playing this game.
And Fat Farm closed.
And that too, yes, thank you, Russ. But for its earliness, there are so many cool ideas. There is a van, right, where you start out each mission and it's kind of your safe spot where the ghost can't get you and it's where all the tools are. There's a interactive, like, computer monitor that you can watch all of the cameras. You can get head-mounted cameras later, so you can just see the first-person perspective. And that's not only, like a cool effect. Like, you're looking for spirit orbs. You are tracking everybody's sanity levels. You are tracking ghost activity in certain parts of the house. You're looking at all the deployed sensors. So there can be, like, one person who just hangs back and is kind of the operator, which is always such a cool idea. But the other thing is, like, I don't know that it's ever going to be super intuitive. I think part of the game that makes it cool, and this sounds like apologetics, but like the thing that is cool about this game is that it is kind of, it is not completely codified, like every single thing that you do. Like,
I would like to be able to know the buttons to crouch.
That's obviously not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about like, even if you are experienced at the game, you can't just roll in with a winning strategy every time because like, the ghosts behave a little bit differently and the area that they're located in is a little bit different. And things like what trips their hunting phases and what makes them super aggressive. And like, you can lay down salt, but it doesn't feel like everything works all the time, which feels kind of realistic to like how it would
real
work.
Ghost hunting. Real,
Justin. I know that you played another game this week that is not janky. From what I understand, would you mind telling me about this one?
I'd love to highlight that. I do want to say one more thing about Phasmophobia is that the run speed is too slow.
Okay, I love
and that
it.
Can be very. No, it's boring. It can be really boring if you're just trying to get back to. It's not scary when you're in the phase when they're not attacking and you're just trying to walk back to your van and you're just slowly. I'm just gonna walk back to the van. Get a crucifix, come back, see you guys in a bit. They need to fix that. Anyway, Amnesia Rebirth is the newest in the series of Amnesia games.
Is this the third one?
I'd love to tell you, Griffin, but I don't remember.
Yes and no. So it's the second one made by the original developer, not including their DLC for the first one. But there was a second one. There was one in between these two that was made by a separate team. Because the original team of Amnesia went on to make Soma.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
This is a, you know, horror game, very light on the, like, mechanics in the sense of, like, interacting with the world. You don't get, like, at least I played the first 2 hours or so, like, you don't get a big gun to shoot them or anything, to shoot the scary stuff. It is, in the first 2 hours I played, actually much more about, like, environment. I did not play the other Amnesia games, but I wanted to hop into this one so we could have be able to speak to it a little bit as we talk about scary games. It's set in Algeria in 1937, which is kind of neat. It's 100 years after the first Amnesia game, I guess, and it follows a woman named Tassi, who is a French woman whose plane has crash landed. She can't find her husband. She can't remember who she is, and her sort of like bringing back her memory is the way the narrative is sort of laid out to you. You see things that spark a memory, and that's sort of how you learn who you are, how you got here, what you're doing.
I'll be honest with you, I have always wanted to play the Amnesia games, but I can't because, as I mentioned earlier, I'm scared. And the original Amnesia has a reputation for being like pretty heavy on the jump scares. And I'm not keen on jump scares in horror movies in general. Is that a big thing on Rebirth?
I would say not a lot. When it is deployed, it is good.
Okay.
It is. I screamed a couple times, like fully. But was it? It wasn't mean. It wasn't like even that scary. It just was a couple things I wasn't expecting to happen at certain moments, like you. So the main sort of, at least in the sections that I was playing, the main battle you're having really is against darkness from an environmental perspective. The main thing you're picking up as you walk around is matches, and you have a very limited supply of matches, and you're in a darkened caves, darkened temples, what have you. If you stay in the dark too long, you lose your mind and you die. So you have to sparingly use matches to light your way. Sometimes it's like, oh, there's a candle right here. I'm going to light it so I have like a little bit of breathing room to figure out my next plan. Sometimes you're walking with just a lit match, hoping it stays lit long enough to get you where you need to go. You can watch it burn down, and if you move too quickly, it'll go out. So you're like slowly walking with this single match, like hoping against hope that you find a lamp or something, a candle, anything that you can light that'll give you a little bit of reprieve.
Is that kind of an artificial time limit on the entire... I'm thinking of like Shadowgate. In Shadowgate, there were only a certain number of torches in the game, and if you moved too slow, you would run out of torches and the game would literally become unbeatable. Is it like on that level of punishment?
It doesn't feel like that because there are areas that are naturally lit or pre-lit. So like make a run at it, maybe. And it seems like the environment, there are a lot of matches around, but it becomes this thing of like, do I want to stop and spend the time to like search for matches? I never had more than 7. Give you an idea of like where we're at.
I've read an embarrassing amount of these games because I keep trying to build up the confidence to play them. From what I understand, you can die in this game, but it doesn't set you back, but it does impact your endings.
Interesting.
So there's like, and I think that's actually more of a punishment than even the first Amnesia. I think a lot of it is like psychological, but there's no real punishment. At the end of the day, it's always completable.
I'd like to take a moment to talk about something that is revealed in the first hour of this game, if that would be okay with you guys.
Sure,
of course.
2 minutes. So if you just skip ahead, I'm going to mark myself at 2 minutes. If you skip ahead 2 minutes, there'll be no more spoilers starting now. One of the things you discover and you don't discover until you are, like I said, about an hour in, is that your main character is pregnant.
Oh, no.
And she doesn't know when the game starts that she is pregnant, and it is the fact that she is pregnant that is pushing her towards escape.
Who tells her in this plane crash situation?
It's a memory. It's the amnesia jogging. Her memory is jogged, and she remembers like, oh shit, I'm pregnant. From that moment on, you can press a button to check in on your baby, to like kind of just check in with yourself to see how are we doing. Okay. But this is why when this situation is like truly fucking desperate, she decides like, I'm not going to die here because I'm carrying this kid. So I refuse to die. And like, that is what the whole thing is sort of launched by. Wow. And you can check in on that throughout. It's this constant stress. But as somebody who's a parent, like it's cool to see that kind of motivation. Aside from like something like Vengeance or something we see in other games. And that is the end of the spoiler section. I did want to mention one other kind of cool mechanic. You have it plays with this idea of rifts between realities. And at one point you kind of stumble into a tear between our dimension and some sort of demonic hellscape. And you have this like bracelet on your wrist that has sort of a compass kind of thing on it. that will point you towards these rifts in the world and can open these rifts with your bracelet. It's called a traveler's bracelet, I think. And you don't know why you have it. You don't know why it works. You don't know what it's doing. And you're trying to, like, you're uncovering that as well. I mentioned specifically that there wasn't a lot in the way of mechanics. This is one kind of cool way that it points you towards what you need to do next, because you have this watch that's attuned to these rifts in reality. There's also some weird, I will say, like, surprising amount of physics that I did not expect, like physics type puzzles, like an example. There was a elevator that I went and found a crank for. Someone had used the crank to load a crossbow trap. And I went and found this crank. And when I started cranking it...
How did you do that? Was there yanking involved?
Russ, I'm never sorry. Been more disappointed in you.
The elevator started going up, but I didn't go up with it because the floor had rotted out on this elevator. And the solution that I came up with, and I guess it's the right thing, I don't know. I went and found a long board that would cover the floor of this elevator, that I could stand on this long board. And it wasn't like, you have found long board, use on elevator. It was just like, I'm going to carry this around and fucking put it here. I don't know. So there is some like light physics stuff.
Those sorts of games that don't give you a lot of weapons kind of lean on this. Even like Half-Life 2 leaned on this before you had gotten like a huge arsenal. And I think it's like a much more naturalistic way to do level progression rather than just like, you found like a special item.
It's neat. It's really cool. If you know, I want to go back to it and play more. But
too scary.
I think it sounds cool. I think I've been kind of bored by the past Amnesia games that I played because the like, you better hide doesn't like, that's not my jam. Like, that's not what I'm looking for a horror game. But this sounds like genuinely very cool.
I'm 2 hours in, and I have yet to, in an interactive way, encounter an enemy.
Oh, okay.
I saw what, there was one time where there was a little jar of oil for my lamp that I had found, a lantern that I had found, and I was walking over to pick up the oil for the lantern, and it was next to a crack in the wall, and I was walking over to pick up the oil, and this hand shot out and snatched the oil away.
No.
And I was like, okay, well, that sucks.
That's where that's I actually just stopped.
That's all the enemy interaction I have had at this point. It's much more about implied terror.
Yeah.
It's cool. Very cool. Okay. So we are going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk about other scary stuff and maybe some not so scary stuff. I don't know. It's our show. Why are you getting so bossy? We'll be right back. Chris Plant, what's the scariest game you've ever played?
Oh, I'm probably like Super Mario, Sonic the Hedgehog. No, PT. If I'm being honest, PT is by far the scariest game that I've ever played. But if you're talking about like scary games that I like, I was thinking before this episode about what are the things I played recently that are good, kind of scary things for people who are more like me, who don't actually have the stomach for scares. And I realized there's a lot. I'm just going to list off a few, but I'll focus on one. I mentioned Kill It With Fire on a previous episode. That's that you hunt spider game. If you have arachnophobia, pretty scary. I think Carrion, where you play as the monster, scary game, but you're the bad guy. So not too scary.
Scary for other people.
I think it's, I think it's an anti-horror game. It's very empowering.
Getting a little scarier here, Return of the Obra Dinn, solving a scary mystery, but at the end of the day, you're the detective, right? You know, it's not
too... Yeah, that tentacle can't actually hurt you.
Yeah, it's in the past. Right? And then now we're getting into it. Prey. It's a shooter. But, like, you don't know if that coffee mug is a baddie.
Okay, that
right?
is quite scary.
That was pretty scary. But the game that I want to recommend to people, just because it's a thing that I think the vast majority of our listeners have probably never heard of, is a game called Slayer Shock. Did any of you play this game?
No.
So Slayer Shock is extremely ambitious, and it doesn't quite deliver on its goal, but it gets pretty dang close. It is made by Minor Key Games. They made the game Eldritch, which I think a lot more people played. It has this kind of like Minecraft-y aesthetic, and it's a immersive sim roguelike. It's very cool. Slayer Shock is kind of the spiritual sequel, and it is basically procedurally generated-ish immersive sim Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Cool.
Inspired by all the like System Shock, BioShock games. This game was made by like one, two people. David Pittman, I believe, is his name. So it's rough. Like, don't expect perfection here, but it's also the closest you will find to a like very cool Buffy-ish game. And that means like before you go out on your missions, you like are at your like hangout area together, and coming up with your plan, and then you go to the school area, or you go to like a collection of suburban houses, or you go to the farm, and you fight vampires with all of your silly vampire weapons. It kind of rules, and it's I think $20 on Steam. It's not super cheap, but relatively reasonable. It's on sale often. I would keep an eye out for it. But yeah, if you're looking for something that you've almost certainly never heard of and don't mind something that's a little fussy and busted, I really, really recommend checking it out.
Griffin?
Yeah. I mean, my favorite, it's I will admit, not a great game, but I think the one I always come back to is Eternal Darkness on the GameCube. Just because I don't think that there have been a ton of great sort of cosmic horror games, and Eternal Darkness has, for all of its many, many flaws, has like a really, really cool way of dealing with, you know, elder gods, and it tells a story that spans like millennia of all these people whose lives were touched by these big, evil, unknowable entities, which is like my absolute shit. But that said, it's been a long time since I've gone back and played that. I already mentioned Shadowgate, which I think is a classic. Until Dawn has a very dear place in my heart, just because I love horror movies, and I love sort of like, you know, campy slasher flicks, which I think this kind of falls in the category of.
Did you play Dark Pictures?
I've not played Dark Pictures yet, because I thought it would be more fun to play that with like other folks, and I could just never really get a squad together. But
we are planning on, for what it's worth, playing the next one in next week's episode. Just
Okay, fantastic. The best, the like capital B best scary game, I feel like I always vouch for the whole Souls series as being very scary, just because of the you cannot get much scarier than the risk reward nature that it kind of like invented. But Bloodborne has that in a big way, but is also really scary, just because it takes place in a pretty scary environment with terrible enemies who look really gruesome, and there are, you know, kind of jump scares every now and then. I think for me, a good horror game has, you know, it can be scary, but it also has a setting that feels so like cohesive and like thorough and original. And man, God, there's a reason that like people are still playing Bloodborne a lot today and are desperate for, you know, more Yharnam adventures. So I think that's probably that one probably takes the cake for me.
I wanted to call out Thief Deadly Shadows. This is not what I would necessarily call entirely a scary game. It's certainly not a horror game. You play as a thief in kind of like a Victorian era city. The game is obviously a stealth game. So most of the game is like you sneaking in the shadows, bonking people on the head, stealing gold, etc., like normal thief stuff. But deep into the game, there's this level called Shalebridge Cradle, which, again, this game came out in like 2003 or 4. And almost the entire level has no enemies in it. There are like very, very, very few. And so that idea of like you discovering like the history of this place through reading notes and audio logs and like recordings, stuff like that, was like a really new idea. Again, this is before stuff like Gone Home, etc. And I remember playing it originally, and it just shattered me. Like, getting through it was so difficult because the audio design is so strong, and every like little sound you make just kind of echoes through this place. And I was just so impressed by it. And I've since gone on to learn that Jordan Thomas was actually the person who worked on that, as well as the bulk of the game. And he's gone on to do work on BioShock and a number of other Blackout independent Club. Projects. And sorry?
In the Blackout Club. The Blackout Club.
Blackout Club, which is his newest one. And they all sort of evolve from, like, I think the core environmental ideas that were shown off in The Deadly Shadows. Not a lot of 3D games from that era age super well, but because of the lighting and the, like, really good audio design, I think this game holds up great. So I'd really, really recommend it. It's still on Steam, and you can get, like, HD mods for it to make it
really quick on that. And sorry, Justin, we'll get into your games right after that.
No worries.
For all the people who are enjoying the game that we spoke about earlier in the show, Phasmophobia, you should really check out the Blackout Club. That game rules. And just did not click in the same way that Phasmophobia has. So if you are looking for a very good Halloween-friendly game, I definitely recommend that one.
Real quick, I have two old games. I don't know. Clock Tower. You guys play Clock Tower?
What a fucking throwback.
It's a very scary point-and-click adventure game where you are constantly hunted by a person with scissors named Scissor Man. They're trying to kill you all the time. It's really scary. It's a scary idea to have a point-and-click adventure game where you're just kind of like walk around point and click and get the rubber chicken, put the pulley in it, and then, oh shit, it's Scissor Man. It's hard to believe.
That came out on PlayStation, right?
Yeah, PS1 game, I think.
There was a weird like early PS1 era that was like Clock Tower, Resident Evil, and Legacy of Kain Blood Omen. Was that the one? The first one? And I was like 10 when the PlayStation came out, and we had that in our house, and we had all three of those games, and they fucked me up, man. Those games are terrifying.
I also wanted to call out, and this is just a personal, I know this is just going to apply to me, but Dracula Unleashed was one of the very first FMV games to use like a lot of video. And it was a like walk around town and try to hunt Dracula. I find FMV games really unnerving pretty much all the time. It's almost always unnerving to me to play an FMV game. I don't know why, but having an FMV game where like every once in a while you get killed by Dracula or you stumble upon a dead body that you could have saved but didn't because you did the wrong things is so genuinely unsettling. There's just this weird jank that FMV brings that kind of like you know the one Griff, did you and I play it? It's Slayer, is that the name of the FMV game?
Harvester?
Harvester, yes, Harvester. That's like a really it's a very, very creepy FMV game that is just made more unsettling by the fact that it is poorly crafted.
I had a question, anyway. Justin, about Dracula Unleashed.
Yeah.
When is Dracula leashed?
I mean, when he's been, I guess, recently slain by Simon Belmont.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy. When he's in his coffin.
He's just taking a nap. Yeah. It doesn't mean he can't, like, do whatever he wants.
Not if you nail it shut.
Or during some of our more experimental sex play.
Okay. Dracula and so I. That's out. That now that's just out there, and I
can't unhear it.
I forgot also Dead Space. I've been thinking about Dead Space a lot lately. I don't know about you guys.
Dead Space fucked up by making it less scary. You turn into a fucking super cop.
Dead Space Dead Space 1 and 2 rip ass, and I would love to get back out up in space.
Y'all, I got some questions for you.
Yeah.
Are you
Dead
ready
Space
for it?
1 is like, I'm going to use this space screwdriver to kill Alien. Dead Space 3 is like, I got a chain gun that shoots space screwdrivers.
Here are some questions. This question's from Lily. What, if anything, would fill the PT-shaped hole in all of your hearts, or our hearts? Was it never meant to be? What made it so phenomenal, according to you guys? I mean, I'm most curious about the beginning of that question. Is there any type of game that fills that void, or has nobody quite nailed that since?
Yeah, I don't think anyone's nailed it. I think the second part of that is what made it so phenomenal. I think it's a scale thing, a scope thing. It's so narrow in scope and scale, but it nails that so well because like those 15 minutes or however long it takes, I mean, a half hour or however long it takes to play through the game, is just like every single moment is so precise and thoughtful. I don't think you could ever do that for 6 hours or 10 hours. It would never be feasible. But that, I think, is why it nails so hard. I could barely play it because it's so paralyzingly scary. But
the scale and the domesticity. I think, you know, yeah, having a horror game that is set. Yeah, I mean, that was the appeal of the original Resident Evil, and nobody lived in a mansion. But this, yeah, this made it even more similar to just a very generic, I guess, American house. I don't know if we'll ever quite see anything like that. Because I think even the real game, you know, obviously you leave the house at the end of PT. There's a plan to go bigger, and I don't think that was necessarily the appeal.
I know this makes me a bad games industry person, but I'm not technically really in it anymore. I liked PT, but I do not quite understand why it occupies such a like venerated place in that. Like, I know, and this is not a read on the people on this call. Like, it is a widely like beloved game that like people, when they talk about like, oh god, I don't know if I'm gonna get a PS5 because I don't want to lose PT, like I don't get that level of
yeah, I'm not there, but it's probably one of my top 10 games of that decade. I think for me, it's two things. One, it's a horror game that, it's like you said, it doesn't make you wait. I don't like horror games like Alien Isolation where it's like the game is sitting still. That I just don't have the patience for it, I confess. The other thing is piecing together the story was so fun, both with the internet and, I mean, even just in playing the game, that it was the rare thing that motivated me to keep doing loops. And because each loop is so short, it was like, well, I'll just do another loop. It just had all of those little hooks that were able to keep me into a genre that I love in film, but just don't really enjoy in games. So it brought me into something that I know I would normally like. It's just most horror games turn me off.
Yeah, I would be more interested in like the idea of, you know, obviously Guillermo del Toro worked on this. The idea that you bring like a bunch of like well-known horror folks in and you have them all do a game that's only like an hour or two long. And you like bring that all together. Like, those are the sort of horror games I'm most interested in because I don't have the stamina to necessarily go through it. And usually horror games, as you know, we've talked about, become, you know, action games towards the end of them. And I kind of, you know, the most interesting part is usually the beginning. So just having a lot of beginnings would be very cool.
Question from Jay. What is one scary game that you refuse to play?
Hmm.
I already said mine, Amnesia 1.
Yeah, it sort of depends. I've played the beginning of Resident Evil, what was it, the most recent one, the first person one, a few times, just the demo and stuff like that. I can't make it past mannequins moving around. The second the mannequins aren't where I thought they were, I'm like, nope, goodbye, and I just stop. And
I thought that was a motion sickness thing.
Also the motion sickness.
I refuse to play games that are very, like, that sort of gothic horror. You saw a lot of it in the like the Xbox presser. There was the one game, you remember, the Giger inspired sort of stuff that's very like demonic and like Bones and all that stuff. I find that so complete, that like metal aesthetic, I find that so completely non-frightening.
Is this where you tell us about the game that you shared with us on Slack?
Oh, Lust from Beyond Scarlet. Yeah, thank God,
the
Chris.
Extremely
really
sexual H.R. Giger-inspired gothic game?
Oh, boy. It's a psychological horror game with occult and erotic themes. Which means sometimes you put your hand in a keyhole that looks like a vagina.
All right, y'all let me know when he's done.
I'll bring it down here. You begin this one in a spooky club, and you've been lured there by someone that wants to have sex with a Y-O-U. And it gets just sexier from there. Basically, you have a special gift that you can see into a demonic dimension, but you can only get there by having sexual arousal. So you have to do that to get to the other dimension of, you have to be sexually aroused.
People could be listening to, this show is free. People could be listening to anything else right now.
I have, so I watched the trailer through, you know, like through my hands. Does it end with a sexual act upon a corpse?
It's not a corpse.
Oh, it's not. Just they're not who, dead.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. This is, I'm going to read you. I'm watching a full playthrough right now. It's not my playthrough, but it might as well have been. And I want to read you some of the lines that I'll just read them as we go. This is what you get for thinking with your cock.
All right.
Alan, please be aware. If you don't follow our instructions, we'll kill you. I'd hate to mess up that face of yours, but I absolutely will if you do not obey. The guy is naked, by the way. Mm. He's chained to a bed and naked. Quiet and listen. I will be addressing you as the seeing one from now on.
Okay. Mm.
That is the proper title for those who are attuned to the vibration of lust god.
Right.
The land of ecstasy and pain.
Probably should have added a parental advisory to the beginning.
I've lured you here because I believe your connection to this world is powerful.
Mine's not anymore.
We will try to bring you to lust god.
Mike.
To do so, you will be administered drugs during sexual arousal until your gift triggers.
Okay. By gift, they mean their virginity, their treasure from the Lord. I'm fully dissociating right now. Can we do something else?
Yeah,
it's on Steam.
I have one last question.
Come get sexy.
It's in the different direction. From friend of the show, Fred Wood, we'll wrap up with this question. I'm too scared to play scary games. How do I get over my fear of scary games? And the answer is simple. Don't. There are so many other games to play. You don't need to be brave. Go play the brightest, happiest game that you can find. Honestly, right now, all the better. I love a good, happy game right now.
I've been playing Pikmin 3, and it's such a nice tonal shift from the world around me. There's a giant cell phone.
I find the way that I feel like I got into scary games was I focused so much on the gaminess of it. I am the type of person who, like, scary stuff is effective on. But if you, like, say you're playing a Soma and you see those scary, terrible robots stalking the hallways that you're supposed to creep around and be very, very stealthy. And, you know, if they find you, they're going to chase you and they might kill you. If you think about that, like, I hope I don't get a game over here because then I'll have to do this whole segment again. And you stop thinking about it like, this thing's going to actually physically fucking kill me. It really sort of reduces its power over you.
When I watch movies, I was watching The Godfather, and I just kept reminding myself, these are actors. These aren't actually the mafia. And this story was written by somebody. In fact, none of it's real.
I mean, if you are the type of person that wants to play a scary game, but you physically can't.
Just
if
remove the magic.
Well, no, I'm saying, like, I have played scary games before. Outlast was a good example. Like, Outlast was like... Outlast was annoying in a way in a way that a lot of those sneaky scary games are, where it would be like me creeping through this asylum trying to, you know, make it to the objective, and then the bad guy would show up, and it would be like so scary and annoying that I'd be like, I quit. But if you load into the level and you just run right up to the bad guy and let him just kill you real quick, so you just get a feel for it, like, I feel like it just takes it, I feel like it makes the game sort of progressable. I don't necessarily play games like that anymore, but I think it is a good way to kind of, like, immersion therapy your way into it.
Yeah, I think once you learn the rules of the game, like, that's how I was able to get over the giant man in Resident Evil 2 Remake, is once I knew that I could move faster than him at all times, I was able to deal with it. But before that, I was like, no, fuck this. There's steps coming at me.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, what else are y'all playing? Are you, Justin, it sounds like you've played quite a bit this week. Have you played anything else?
Mainly, like, trying to check out, like, horror stuff. Not things that I would say are worth necessarily mentioning. I did play World of Horror. That's really cool, but it's a little older, so I didn't bring it up.
Have they has there been, can you tell if there's been, like, updates to that game? Because they launched it in pretty early alpha phase, and there was only, like, a handful.
I didn't play it initially, so I don't have much of a frame of reference. I'm still playing Hades.
Yeah, have you
guys
beaten Hades?
Lord,
with
teach
every weapon?
Me how to stop playing Hades. I just want to stop. I beat it this week. I beat
you hit
it.
Credits.
Yeah,
wow.
I beat it. And you know what I did after I beat it? Can you guess, Chris? Can you guess what I did after I beat it?
Probably played it again.
I played it again, Chris. The game is actually monstrous in the way that it continues to be like, well, you've beat it. Hey, there's one other thing that we were kind of thinking about maybe you could help us out with. Do you want to reunite the entire world and actually fix things? It's like, I've beat you twice. Stop it. You have to clear it 10 times to beat it. And then after you beat it, they're like, actually, we've got some other stuff we got cooking. We'd love for you to check in real quick and just keep playing this fucking game. I can't stop playing Hades. I'm going to say this. It's the funnest game ever. Now, I know what you're thinking. There's been no game that I've continued to play for this long just because it's fun.
Yeah.
I think Hades is the funnest game ever. If you get bored, change your weapons. I just discovered two things this week after probably 100 hours of Hades at this point. I just for the first time found a sack of gold behind Charon.
Oh, yeah.
That I could go steal, and he was like, what the fuck? And we had to fight.
Yeah.
And that was bad. And I just remembered, I guess maybe I knew this initially, but your mirror, there are alternate
oh my God.
Perks you could take.
Yeah.
Literally, I had all of them completely maxed out, and I was just getting all this, shadow money or whatever, and I was like, what am I going to do with all this? And then at one point I was just like, looks at the achievement and I'm like, wait, I don't have half of these perks. And I remembered that you could like flip to alternate perks.
Yeah.
And
it's not clear about those. That.
No, it doesn't.
No. It probably taught me months ago.
The mirror is the one thing in the game that I think is pretty unclear. Justin, do you know what I'm playing?
If you say Nier Automata, I'm going to lose my fucking mind.
I'm playing Hades.
Oh, yeah, okay. It's good, right? Are you enjoying the video game Hades?
I do runs while I'm on my bike, and last night...
That sounds uncomfortable. No,
it's good.
It's not how you use a bike, Chris. We've talked about it. You got to just ride it. You can't run at the same time.
I cut my time down, got my first sub-25-minute run last night. Feeling pretty good.
Nice.
But here's the thing. Everybody in our email, sending us questions and their replies, they're all very nice. They're always saying, hey, like, what's your build, right? Y'all, I've beaten this game a lot. I do not plan for builds whatsoever. That is the least interesting thing to me. I like just being like, the heart wants what it wants right now. I'm going to see where this takes me.
Yeah, absolutely. I do switch my weapon around constantly. I don't have a favorite weapon. I just like whatever I need at that point to play through. They're all fun. I don't love the spear. Have you unlocked any of the hidden aspects?
I've beaten it with two aspects. I'm trying to get through it
with the hidden ones. Yeah,
aspect on the spear is fucking great. Yeah. It's so wild.
Yeah. That talk about changing the energy of the game. Yeah. Okay, talk about Hades, but we can't. We got to move on with our lives. Next week, we're going to be talking about Dark Pictures, Little Hope, which is this sort of sequel to Man of Medan, which I guess I should play that as well. When is that out? When is Little Hope out?
Soon. Before we record.
Well, one would hope.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to our show. If you have any thoughts about the Dark Pictures saga or any stories from that or Until Dawn or what have you, you can send them to mail@besties.fan. Besties.fan is the link to share if you want to get other people on board with our program. We really, really appreciate it.
I was going
to
say, we are also creeping steadily toward the next-gen console launch of next year. This year, rather, I should say. This year. It's happening this year. Next month. So get jammed for that. We will have more and more.
Get jammed, he says.
Yeah, I'm making it happen.
Powerful, powerful stuff. So follow and listen for free on Spotify. Share the link to the show, besties.fan. And follow us on Twitter @TheBestiesPod. You can also find a link there to join our mailing list, which we'd love it if you did that as well. That is going to do it for us, though, for this week. So until next time, be sure to join us again next week for The Besties. Because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
The Besties is a Spotify original podcast. In association with Fox Media. The show is edited by Jelani Carter and produced by Ben Hosley. And our theme song is by Ian Dorsch.
Besties!